Hello, readers. My name is Jason Jefferies, and this is Bookin', brought to you by our new presenting sponsor, the North Carolina Book Festival, one of North Carolina's many amazing premier literary events. Happy to host North Carolina's many amazing authors, along with national and international bestsellers, prize winners, independent authors, and debut authors. My guest today is Jeffrey D. Simon. He is the author of several books about terrorism and a former RAND analyst who also taught at UCLA. His new book is The Bulldog Detective, William J. Flynn in America's First War Against the Mafia, Spies, and Terrorists, which is published by our friends at Prometheus Books. Jeffrey, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
It is an honor to have you here. And before we dive into your book proper, Jeffrey, can you tell us what is it about the topic of terrorism and the people who fight against it that has inspired you to make a career out of writing and teaching about it?
Well, actually, it kind of evolves. After I got my PhD in political science, I was specializing in international crises, international war, and then I worked at the RAND Corporation for a number of years, and there the specialty became terrorism. So, you know, it wasn't like some great event or some great, epiphany that I had that got me into the terrorism, but it became the job. And then I was just so fascinated by it. And, you know, terrorism is something we've had since the beginning of time. People think it started with 9/11, but our country had terrorist incidents right after we became a republic, Barbary pirate states, and then we've had domestic terrorism. So there's really nothing new about it. But the one thing about terrorism that people have a hard time understanding is that there's never a solution to it, because it just takes one person with one bomb and one cause to, you know, to keep that pot boiling. But you got to keep fighting it, and you got to keep trying to stay one step ahead of the terrorists.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thank you so much for that answer. One more question about a previous book. As I understand, this is also something that you lectured on. What is a lone wolf terrorist?
Lone wolf terrorist, it's like all terrorism, there's no one accepted definition, but it's basically an individual working alone without the support, the training of a group. So in other words, you have, you know, Al-Qaeda, you have ISIS, you have all these other groups. But when an individual such as a Unabomber, Theodore Kaczynski, who back in the 70s to 1990 sent package bombs throughout the country, he was working just by himself. So the lone wolf is very hard to catch because they're not communicating with other terrorists. There's not many indicators to find out what they're up to. But with the internet, you can have what we call inspired lone wolves. So they latch on to another group, their social media accounts, and they're inspired by the, you know, propaganda from these groups, and they launch an attack. But what separates a lone wolf from the member of a group is that they're basically on their own, and they're very dangerous. We've had some horrific terrorist attacks by lone wolves, and also mass shootings that may not qualify as terrorism by lone wolves.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for that answer, Jeffrey. Now on to your new book, The Bulldog Detective. Why until now, Jeffrey, has there never been a published biography about William J. Flynn?
You know, that is such a hard item for me to even figure out as I was writing this book, because he's just a remarkable individual. He was head of the Secret Service. He was head of the Bureau of Investigation, which is the predecessor of the FBI. This is all in the early 20th century. And he did remarkable things, which I'll talk about. But I think the reason there was no published biography is he just became forgotten in history as time went on. There'd be items about him when people wrote about those times, but he kind of became overshadowed by J. Edgar Hoover, A. Mitchell Palmer, and other individuals, you know, from that historical era. And it really was remarkable, because I thought there would be tons of books on him when I started doing the research and trying to figure out, is there a book here?
Yeah, well, good for you for figuring it out and writing it, because now we have this wonderful book. My next question is about an event that takes place in the introduction of this book. How sloppy does a spy have to be, Jeffrey, to leave a briefcase full of government secrets on a train?
It's incredible. First of all, this government spy was a German spy, but he was a diplomat. He was the commercial attaché for the German embassy. And this occurred in 1915. World War I had already started for New Germany, but we don't enter until 1917. But it was supposed to be neutral, but supplies are going off to the Allies, to Britain. So basically, Germany set up a foreign espionage, propaganda, and sabotage unit in New York. Now, Dr. Albert, his name was Dr. Albert, he was in charge of a $27 million budget to fund sabotage, to fund propaganda and espionage. And he had all this information in his briefcase. And he carried it back and forth from work to home, not lock it up in a safe. So he has it with him on a elevated train in New York. This is like, subway train. And he's reading a book and he realizes his train has hit the 50th Street station, which was his station. And he sees the doors are closing. So he yells, "Hold the door, hold the door." And he runs out, forgetting his briefcase. Meanwhile, one of William J. Flynn's men, Flynn created a special counter-espionage unit to trail the German spies, sees the briefcase on the seat and seizes it immediately. So the Albert now realizes he left his briefcase. He rushes back into the car. A woman says, "Oh, somebody took it. Somebody just ran out." So now he's looking for who took it. He runs into the street and he sees the Secret Service agent, one of Flynn's men, running away with the briefcase, and he runs after him. So we have a scene in New York of a German spy diplomat chasing the Secret Service agent with his briefcase. The agent's name, our agent's name, a Secret Service agent name was Frank Burke. He jumps onto a trolley car, sort of a streetcar, and gets away, tells the conductor, "See that crazy man running down the street waving his hands? He created a commotion on the train. Keep going. He's going to cause problems here." So the trolley car keeps going. Albert gets, I'm sorry, Burke gets off. He calls Flynn from a phone booth. Flynn rushes up to meet him, and they look through the briefcase and they realize, "Wow, we got something here." It was all the plans for what the Germans wanted to do, and it helped, prepare us for what the Germans were up to. And it made Flynn even more famous than he had been before.
Yeah, I'm picturing this as a great scene in a film, Jeffrey. I hope you're shopping out your options for this because that would be fantastic.
Oh, I am, but I'll tell you, I'm in Los Angeles. It's tough selling to Hollywood. I mean, they get bombarded with so many things, but now it'd make a great movie. Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. How, Jeffrey, did William J. Flynn do more than any one man to rid the country of foreign spies, as one newspaper proclaimed?
Well, basically, on this one episode we just talked about, because that was one of the biggest successes in terms of counter-espionage in Secret Service history. And without that, we would have sort of been in the dark about what the Germans were up to. So after this was, the Secret Service leaked it to a newspaper so it would be published and that it would raise awareness throughout the country about what the Germans were up to. And it led to a bunch of expulsions of German spies. So that was what that newspaper, was referring to. And also, after Flynn left the Secret Service, there were films made about him in terms of his exploits and everything. But Flynn had also a career before this point, because this is 1915. He joined the Secret Service in 1897. Now, Flynn always wanted to be a Secret Service agent. And he grew up in New York. He was a son of a immigrant from Ireland, a butcher, and his mother, though, was a native New Yorker. But his father died when he was 15, so he had to go to work to support his five siblings. So he works as a plumber, a tinsmith, a stone carver, even a baseball player, semi-professional baseball player, which is hard to imagine if you look at the cover of the book, because Flynn was a 200, 300 pound, 6 foot individual. I mean, he ate a lot, so it's hard to see him, playing baseball. But Flynn basically always wanted to be the Secret Service agent. And even though he built a successful plumbing business, he applied in his mid-20s to become an agent. And he joined the Secret Service late 1890s, and he became head of the New York office of the Secret Service in the early 1900s. And that's where one of the first parts of his career really start, because he went after the first mafia family in New York. This was the Morello Lupo gang, who was involved in extortion, murder, kidnappings, and things along those lines. But they also were engaged in a major counterfeiting ring. And that's what the job of the Secret Service was, to go after counterfeiters. That's what the Secret Service was founded for. But Flynn also wanted to get them for all the other things, you know, that they were doing. And he was joined by a very brave New York police detective named Joseph Petrosino. Now, Petrosino was sent to Sicily in 1909 by the NYPD. But during that trip, he was assassinated by associates of the Morello Lupo gang. So Flynn gets energized even more. He really wants to bring down this gang, and he arrests them for their counterfeiting. And eventually they all get sentenced to long prison terms. So he's given credit for bringing down sort of the first mafia family in New York. So he already got that accomplishment. And then he joins the NYPD as a deputy commissioner and then becomes head of the Secret Service in 1912.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for that information, Jeffrey. Listeners, we're going to take a brief break here to hear a word about Libro FM audiobooks, and then I will be right back with Jeffrey D. Simon. The Book and Podcast is sponsored by Libro FM Audiobooks. Libro FM lets you purchase audiobooks directly from your favorite local bookstore, Quail Ridge Books. You can pick from more than 100,000 audiobooks, including New York Times bestsellers and recommendations from booksellers around the country. With Libro.fm, you'll get the same audiobooks at the same price as the largest audiobook company out there. You know the name. But you'll be part of a much different story, one that supports community. Listeners of Bookin can get a 3-month audiobook membership for the price of one. Go to Libro.fm, that's Libro.fm, and enter Bookin, Bookin, in the promo code space. With each listen, take pride in knowing that you're supporting local bookstores. I'm back with Jeffrey D. Simon, author of The Bulldog Detective, which is published by our friends at Prometheus Books. Jeffrey, before we get back into your book, because we are a podcast that caters to authors and publishers and book nerds otherwise, can you tell us a little bit about your publisher, Prometheus Books, and what it has been like to work with them?
Oh, it's great. You know, I had published a book with them about 10 years ago called Lone Wolf Terrorism, Understanding the Growing Threat. But they're connected with Roman and Littlefield. But the people I work with, Prometheus, were just super. You know, they're very, you know, advanced, you know, smart publisher. You know, they really interact with you. So it's a joy. And I think every writer knows there are many different steps of, you know, the satisfaction in the writing process. You know, one is when you come up with an idea. Two is when you figure you're going to have enough to write 100,000 words. And then three is when you get, you know, a great publisher. Four is when you finish it and send in the manuscript. Five is when it actually publishes it. And six is when you hold it in your hand, you know. And so it was a great, great experience. So I'm very happy with them.
That's fantastic. As a book nerd, I enjoy the name Prometheus Books as well. Well, thank you so much. So before the break, you were talking a little bit about the mafia and the Morello Lupo gang. William J. Flynn, of course, dismantled the first mafia family to exist in America. How did the work that he did, if it did, influence the later work that Elliot Ness and the Untouchables did to bring down Al Capone, or maybe just work in tracking down and breaking up mafia families in general?
Yeah, well, I don't know how much Elliot Ness was even aware, you know, of Flynn, but basically what's interesting is that Flynn brought down the Morello Lupo gang, not for all the horrific murders. I mean, they killed somebody and left the body in a barrel in the streets of New York, and that became a national story. It was called the Barrow Murder Mystery. But he got them for counterfeiting. So when the judge sentenced Morello and Lupo, he sentenced them to 25 to 30 years in prison, which was unheard of for a counterfeiting, you know, thing. But basically the judge knew what they had been involved with, and I think that was one of the, you know, punishments. Elliot Ness gets Al Capone, not for all the horrific things he did with killing people, but for income tax evasion. So, I mean, there's a sort of a similar thing there. Now, maybe, you know, Ness was aware of, I hope he was, you know, of what Flynn did, but basically it was sort of, you know, getting at the network and just, you know, working your way up to, you know, get the, you know, kind of, you know, the big fish. But there's a scene I talk about in the book where when Flynn was head of the, was a deputy commissioner of the NYPD, he meets a bunch of his detectives and says, we're going to go raid this gambling house. Mm-hmm. And he gives them hatchets and axes, and they're walking through the streets of New York, these big, heavy, tough-looking detectives, to a gambling house. So it almost looked like Elliot Ness and the Untouchables as they're about to raid, you know, a bootlegging joint. So, but Flynn had a tremendous influence during his time, you know, on other individuals.
Yeah. How often is it the case that folks who are associated with the mafia, if you know, are brought down on charges that are not, you know, the drastic murder charges or what have you, but things along the lines of income tax evasion.
Yeah. And also what's fascinating about the Flynn case with the mafia is that most of the people were afraid to testify against Morello Lupo. So they always got away. Anytime they had been arrested, charges were dropped. There's just never enough evidence or witnesses. Mm-hmm. He finally got one of the members of the gang who really wasn't a member. This person, Anthony Comito, was kind of forced to join and do counterfeiting. And they said, if you leave us, we're going to kill you. Mm-hmm. So he was happy when Flynn arrested him and others. And Flynn now got a cooperating witness. The only problem was Comito's moniker was Comito the Sheep. It wasn't like Comito the Lion or things like that. So Flynn said, oh, wow, he may not stand up in trial. But he stood up, you know, Morello and Lupo were glaring at him, giving him death signs. So he got a witness, though, that came through. So there's a lot of different elements that are involved, you know, in bringing down mafia or actually, you know, letting any kind of arrest stick.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. Jeffrey, what was it like to grow up as a child of William J. Flynn?
Well, the children of Flynn, it turned out that after he left the Secret Service and he became head of the Bureau of Investigation, forerunner of the FBI, and after he was sort of forced out of that job, he created a detective agency and he had some of his children help run the agency. But they were alcoholics, they were abusive to clients, and kind of ran the agency down. And that was sort of a sad point, you know, in his life and in his career. But I was able to track down his grandson, who provided me with anecdotes that was passed down to him by his mother about his, you know, famous grandfather. And so that was, you know, fun to do and, you know, fun to interact with. But there's one other thing about Flynn that was really amazing. He also, in retirement, created a detective magazine called Flynn's. It became the most famous detective magazine of the 1920s, and it lasted for many years. And he encouraged writers to submit nonfiction or fiction stories for the magazine. And he said, we don't care who you are, if you're not known, just if it's a good story, we'll publish it. So one of the unknown writers who wrote to him and he read the story said, sounds pretty good. And he published it was Agatha Christie. And the story became a witness for the prosecution. But there's another important element in Flynn's story is that he basically organized America's first war on domestic terrorism. He was appointed head of this Bureau of Investigation in 1919 when there was a wave of terrorism going on in America. And it was perpetrated by Italian anarchists led by Luigi Galliani. And Flynn had to sort of organize from scratch a strategy to coordinate with local and state officials because the bombs were going off all over the country. And it sort of set a precedent for how we can fight terrorism.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a couple of follow-up questions to that info here. One, can you still access, or can we still access any archives of Flynn's magazine anywhere?
Yeah, Library of Congress.
Yeah, wonderful, wonderful.
Library of Congress, and there are websites around that have I think for sale different detective magazines, and if you track them down, they may have an issue here and there. But the Library of Congress has his issues.
That's fantastic. And then back to William J. Flynn's children for a moment, despite the fact that they all grew up and became alcoholics and ran his agency into the ground. When they were kids, my understanding is that they were not permitted to travel outside of, I believe it was a 100-yard radius or so of their home. Is this,
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, because the mafia and others were after Flynn, and so packages would be sent to Flynn's home. Flynn lived in New York, and so the Secret Service who was with him, he was with the Secret Service, but he had his people look at the package, and they'd have to dump it in water. They throw the package in water that was supposed to help neutralize if there was a bomb or so. So the kids had all their Christmas presents ruined and everything. So that wasn't a joyful experience for them. And one other thing about Flynn being a New Yorker, when he was appointed head of the Secret Service, he said, "God, this is great. This is my life dream. I want to do it. But I love New York. I don't want to leave. Can you move the Secret Service to New York?" Now, I grew up in New York, so I know the mindset of a New Yorker. Like, only a New Yorker would think, they said to him, "We can't do that. We're protecting presidents now. You have to come to Washington." But they made a compromise where he could commute, lower salary, pay his own expenses, and live in New York and do his job both in New York and Washington, D.C.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Jeffrey. Finally, if there were an equivalent of William J. Flynn working today, we likely would not know who this person is. But since William J. Flynn was at the peak of his career, who are some of the others who have come closest to equaling his body of work or his accomplishments over their careers?
Well, I would say, like in law enforcement, Bill Bratton, who was New York police commissioner and Los Angeles police commissioner, had a stellar reputation just like Flynn had. But Flynn was with the Secret Service and just a brief time with the NYPD. J. Edgar Hoover does not have that, reputation that Flynn had. But Hoover had the long career, and eventually Hoover was basically working under Flynn. I mean, Flynn, he Hoover was head of this radical division of the predecessor to the FBI, while Flynn was head of the whole Bureau of Investigation. But I think it's hard to find those individuals. But what's remarkable is that if you try to think of somebody today who's world famous, who'll be forgotten 100 years from now, because Flynn was the rock star of his period. He was a rock star law enforcement official, written about in all the newspapers, had movies made about him, silent films, and he published his own stories, and then just basically disappeared almost from the history books. But we won't know for another 100 years.
Right. Well, he has disappeared from the history books no longer, thanks to you, Jeffrey. Thank you for writing this wonderful book. Listeners, I've been speaking with Jeffrey D. Simon, author of The Bulldog Detective, which is published by our friends at Prometheus Books. Jeffrey, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. It was fun.
Once again, I would like to thank Jeffrey D. Simon for joining me. Copies of The Bulldog Detective can be ordered from your favorite local independent bookstore. And if you don't have a favorite local independent bookstore, order it from Page 158 Books in Wake Forest, North Carolina. I would also like to thank Libro FM Audiobooks. Please navigate over to Libro.fm and enter the promo code BOOKIN, that's BOOKIN, in the promo code space to get one free audiobook and support your favorite local independent bookstore in the process. My name is Jason Jefferies, and this has been